Hello and welcome to the ESG Fitness Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to help you think, learn and grow, and hopefully smile and laugh on the way too. My aim here is to break down your barriers to taking action and provide you with evidence-based diet and exercise information in a fun and interesting way. I hope I nail that and I hope you enjoy. If at any point you are enjoying this and you think, wouldn't it be great to work with Emma? You can head to esgfitness.co.uk to find out more information. Without further ado, because I hate long introductions, here is this episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I am joined by Catherine today. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very good. I'm feeling buzzing after Level Up. And I was just saying to you, I feel like I have like a social hangover from it as well.
Yeah, I tried to speak to every single person and I think I did.
That's impressive. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people there.
It was so good though. It's such a nice group. And you know, the thing that I think that I was most proud of is like a couple of my mates came because it's Edinburgh. They were like, oh, I like, you know, people outside of fitness who don't really know what you do. So a couple of my mates came and like my flatmate came as well. And they were all like, everyone is so nice. Like, it doesn't matter that you don't know anyone. And like, no one was like, oh, why are you here? It was just like, oh, great. What do you do? Like, people are interested. And yeah, it's just such a lovely group of people.
Jordan was in my masterminds group.
Oh, lucky you.
It was so nice to like hear about what he does with like Bitcoin stuff. But he had loads of good ideas for the coaches as well. I think it's quite nice, like even just speaking to somebody in a different industry, like I think it really helps, like, I don't know, like with different ideas and maybe like things you wouldn't normally think about.
Yeah, I always think weirdly in the masterminds, people who aren't in fitness give better advice, which is such a good thing. If you can get in a situation and an environment that's conducive to this, like I don't mean just rock up to your friends and like give me business advice, but if there's a situation where you can be like, can we sit down and I'm going to go through what I'm doing at the moment and I'd love like your input on this. I actually think it's better when someone isn't also a personal trainer a lot of the time, because you get, like you're saying, this like different perspective on things, and really you don't want to be doing what everyone else is doing. You already know what everyone else is doing, right? So like have a little bit of different perspective, especially if you can do that with a client. Like basically, like, why did you sign up? What would you change? If you like, you're in the client's shoes, you're going to learn so much from that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, it was a really, really good weekend.
It was awesome. I can't wait for the next one. When is it?
Probably April, March time, and probably London.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm already excited for it.
It'll be great. Okay. You had an article to start with as well, didn't you?
I did. So did you see that Andy's doing a comedy?
I did. Yeah.
How awesome is that? I still like stand up. Oh, I think he'll be awesome. He's really funny.
Yeah, but he said it was all online. So I asked him to send me the link because, you know, I was sharing on my story stuff about what people had said they would look for in a partner, what they find attractive. And it was so interesting because genuinely 95% of people said humor, someone who's funny. Now, I don't know if, because actually on my question box, Shona asked me this question, right? And my initial response was like ambition and I don't know, like someone who's funny, someone who's ambitious, you know, like the standard things people go to. And then I was like quite honest with myself and I was like, look at the people that you have dated. Are they the most ambitious people that you know? Like, sorry to anyone who's listening that I've dated, but like, probably not. Or more to the point, was that what I was attracted to? Mm-hmm. And the answer, honestly, is no, it wasn't. It was something else. And I think sometimes we have, like, I don't think we're totally honest when we answer those questions. And I'm not sure people are, but I don't think the number one thing people are attracted to is humor, even though they say that it is. But anyway, because we had so many people saying that, I think I put something on my story like, oh, I need to start stand-up comedy or something. And Andy had replied with what he's doing.
That's incredible.
I think it would be such a good thing to do for public speaking.
Mm-hmm. And building confidence.
I think you need to do it in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're like wanting to go into actually like standing up in front of a group of people, Whereas I suppose, like, if say Andy was wanting to do things online or like do webinars online, then maybe the course that he's doing online would be good. But like,
Yeah, but are you gonna
see,
do online stand-up comedy? I don't know. I
is
just
that a
think you
thing?
get so much from, like, if you imagine that you're nervous standing up giving a talk about something that you really know about that doesn't have to be funny, that people you know that the audience are interested in. If you get nervous doing that, imagine standing up in front of people and trying to make them laugh. Like, I just think once you've done that, then like any level of presentation, like, nah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Who
That's
was
why I
that?
want to do it, because I'm like, yeah, that would make me so much better at presenting.
Yeah. Who was it? I think it might have been like Alessia said that it helped, or it was either Steph or Alessia had said that it helps them just to say, I feel really nervous when they've stood up and started their presentation. And then they both like came across like really well and like made people laugh.
Yeah, I think that does help. Like, I guess it's the common humanity thing. Nicola Hobbs was good. It was interesting because you could tell actually that she was really nervous. Like, I mean, obviously I spoke to her just before, like she was quite nervous. And so she did like her relaxation thing to start. And I was like, this is for you. I mean, it was great for all of us, right? It was such a, like, she spoke her story, you know, she had everyone close their eyes and like think about their body. And it w went on for like, you know, a good 5 minutes of like talking through the different parts of your body and how you're feeling them. I could tell that part of the reason she was doing that was to calm herself. So I guess people have these things that they can do at the start of presentations that kind of ease in. I was so impressed with Shah because the clicker didn't work. Then I started freaking rolling up the present, like whatever the backboard was, like nothing was working for her. And she was so just like, okay, fine, I'll still go ahead. Like everything is fine. And just like so composed. And I asked her afterwards and she was like, well, because she used to compete. She's like, when you've been competing for years, you know, bodybuilding and stuff, then you just kind of get on with it and like things change all the time backstage and blah, blah, blah. And you just have to be like, well, I still need to go up and show up at my best. But it was really impressive. Like stuff like that would put me off, I think, if I had to have someone else like clicking my slides. And yeah, so I was mega impressed with her.
Yeah, she was really like cool and calm. Yeah, I was
And
very
such a
impressed.
tough topic as well.
All of the talks were really good. Like,
Yeah, I was so impressed with them. Yeah.
I think it was quite nice that they were like 20 minutes as well, because I think that kind of captures people's attention quite well. Whereas, like, you know, when you sit through like an hour, sometimes you might kind of like drift out. Or at least I find this because my concentration's a bit rubbish, but I like drift out and then drift back in again, and through
Yeah.
no fault of like anybody else but myself. But
Yeah,
it's
no,
probably
I
worth
totally
it.
agree. I think like shorter talks are often better, and then also it gives you chance for kind of questions after, which is always quite useful, like getting a bit more specific about things.
Oh yeah, the article that I
Yeah,
read.
tell
So
me.
this is like going like reversing back to the laughter thing. So it was an article about like the evolutionary reasons behind laughter and why, like, why do we laugh? Because you kind of think about like it is kind of like a strange thing, isn't it? So like the reasoning behind it was almost like it was a way to relieve tension after going through like a period of things being out of normality, or like after a threat, to show that everything was safe again. And that's sort of the reason why, like, if one person laughs, you know, like when one person was laughing, or like in the room at Level Up, like everybody else would laugh. It's like contagious, and that's sort of the reasoning behind it, is because it's like a signal of, okay, the threat has passed and now everything is like safe again. And that's, I think, like linking back to the question that you had asked on Instagram about like what qualities are you attracted to in a partner, it kind of like translates to like feelings of safety. Like if somebody makes you laugh, it's sort of like an attraction because you feel safe.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess it's the connection part as well. But I often think that people who self-proclaim that they're funny are really not funny
Not
at all
funny.
and just try really hard and make like, you know, forced jokes.
Shit jokes, yeah.
Yeah. So when anyone, there's two like red flags I have. One is people who claim that they are funny, and the other one is people who claim that parents love them.
What?
Do you ever get that when someone's like, oh yeah, like I'm not worried about it being introduced to the parents because parents just love me.
Oh, like, okay, I thought you meant like their own parents.
Oh, well, yeah, no, that's a green flag.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would just
Hopefully.
hope that everyone's would, but yeah, I think that's always a bit weird as well.
It is a bit weird, isn't it? Like, how do you know, like,
And also, like, I was talking to Jordan about this, and I was like, what sort of, like, it's just a weird perception, because I'm like, of course people's parents love you. They're literally, like, they're forced to, right? If you're being introduced to your daughter's girlfriend or boyfriend, like, of course they're gonna say that they like you. Like, that's the whole freaking point. Like, or at least they're gonna pretend that they do. So obviously you think that parents like you. Like, that's, yeah.
Unless
There
you're like a
must be some
terrible
weird, like,
person.
ego thing. Like, oh man, they must like me so much. I'm like, they've literally said, this is my girlfriend or boyfriend. You basically have to like them because I like them. So of course they're going to make a massive effort.
Parents really like me.
Yeah. Okay, should we answer a
Thought
question?
that was interesting. Yes, let's do it. I think I found where you and Andy got to on the last podcast. I think, but just say if you guys
It
are
will
ready.
likely be the one after when I posted that quote.
Okay. Did you do Sharon's about how important is it to complete the number of reps in one go for an exercise?
Yeah,
I
I think
think
we're
that's
on the
what you
protein one.
were. Okay. Oh yeah, I can see you're live there. Imagine I just started playing live. Okay.
How good is that quote? Read it out. Have you got it
Oh,
up?
I do, yeah. Okay. The most practical skill in life is learning to do things when you don't feel like doing them. Anyone can do it when it's easy, but most people drop out the minute it gets hard.
I just think that is the biggest life hack ever, is just to do things when you don't feel like it. Like, that will put you so far ahead in life, and it doesn't require any level of skill. Like, it's literally just doing things when most people wouldn't. And it's becoming easier and easier to put yourself in the top 1% by doing that, because literally everyone won't do it. Almost everyone will not do it, because people just love instant gratification. And if you can just delay gratification even slightly and do stuff when you know that you should be doing it, or you know that it will benefit you, or you know it will get you closer to your goals, but other people won't do it, like, it's a
That's
kind
hella
of easy.
motivating. That's so
Yeah,
motivating.
it's so motivating to know that, like, that in itself is a life hack. Like, you don't have to be privileged in certain areas, you don't have to, like, have the best genetics, you don't have to have the best background. Like, it's literally just showing up for yourself consistently.
Oh, class. Okay. Can the tempo, this is from one of my one-to-one clients, can the tempo of your lifting have a major impact on results? For example, a PT in the gym got me to slow my leg press dramatically, and the feeling was so intense I could only push half of my usual weight. What are the pros and cons of this form of resistance training for body composition and strength goals?
Have you watched the EIQ lecture on
The
this?
tempo one, I haven't yet. By
Okay,
it's Luke, isn't
I'll
it?
answer then. Huh?
Okay.
It's very good. I don't fully agree with all of it, I don't think. I think tempo is often overplayed. It's probably underplayed with general population and overplayed in certain, like, bodybuilding communities. Mainly because some people really push tempo, so it'd be like a 5 second concentric and a 5 second eccentric, and I'm like, sorry, but 10 seconds for one rep is boring as hell. The way that I kind of weigh it up is, in my opinion, tempo should be, for the vast majority of the time, just safe, like a tempo that is safe. So you don't want to go too fast because you risk injury. You don't want to go too slow because it's boring. And not only is it boring, but you've noticed here, what did she say? She could only lift half her weight or half her reps.
Push half my usual weight.
Yeah, so you can lift half your usual weight, right? And we know that the biggest contributor to muscle hypertrophy is volume. So you've just cut your volume down. Now, there is an argument now that you've got longer muscle tension. So actually, is the volume going to be higher than what it would be if we were just creating volume via sets times reps? But I still think, you really are cutting the volume down quite significantly. And I would focus on lifting heavy reps with, like, a safe tempo. So maybe like 2 seconds down, 1 second up kind of thing, as opposed to really trying to push very slow eccentrics. Now, I think one of the reasons that it's so popular is because you will create a lot of muscle damage doing that. So if you do really so slow, like you'll notice this massively if you do like really slow deadlifts, for example, like especially stiff leg deadlifts, you will have such bad DOMS for the next couple of days. And usually our go-to in our head is like, that must mean I've done something. If it hurts, that must mean that the stimulus is more and that I've done something. And that isn't necessarily true. And that also means that if you look at your volume over the week, if I did really slow eccentric deadlifts on Monday, and then I'm so sore for the rest of the week that I actually can't train deadlifts again until the next Monday, and it's impacted how much I walk, and it's impacted my other leg session that week, or if I'm doing quads another day, or push another day, or pull another day, like it's really impacting me in that sense, then actually my total volume will be reduced as well. So I wouldn't overdo tempo. Now and again, I quite like to do it. And I know that Andy did a block for committed that was more focused on tempo. And I do think there is a place for it. I also think there's potentially a place for it within sessions, but not every single set, every single rep. So you might, I don't know, finish off with doing something that makes the exercise harder, like doing really slow reps. And then you could even do almost like a tempo drop set where you're doing, don't know, the first sort of five press ups, really slow, really controlled. And then you're doing your second five, just trying to finish off to get to the 10 reps. That could be a way to kind of make the exercise that a little bit easier. I also think it's really, really useful if you're working out at home and you want to make an exercise harder, but you don't have heavier weights. Actually, doing it at a slower tempo will mean that it's harder and you're putting more tension on the muscle. And if you're someone who gets injured a lot, or like I said, has limited weights, then you can utilize it to create more tension. So it's a tool, but I think it's often overused. And sometimes personal trainers will do things like tempo, or like drop sets, or like static holds, or, you know, like things that make exercises really, really hard to kind of prove a point that it's hard, and thinking that actually hard means better results, and it doesn't always mean better results. And there isn't enough research to show that tempo increases hypertrophy. And when I, so I kind of grilled Luke on this, who is an absolute expert on resistance training and muscle hypertrophy. And I was like, is there, you know, is there any evidence to prove that we should be lifting with slower tempo, given that we will have lower total volume? And he said no, but under the caveat that some of this research is very hard to do, because the way that we measure volume at the moment is the total number of reps that you do times the sets that you do them. So, like, how much weight have you lifted? How much volume have you lifted for the whole workout? That doesn't consider how long the muscle has been under tension with that volume. So there is like some potential that it's more important. But I certainly find that if I do slower tempo, like I can't lift as much. And if I certainly if I do it at the start of my session, that then impacts the rest of my session.
Yeah, I think they're all amazing points. I particularly like the one about, especially like when we were in lockdown and we had to try and find ways to make workouts and certain exercises more difficult, and maybe people didn't have the weights available to do that. Tempo was great then. I think like now that we're sort of out of that and everybody's getting back to their busy lives, then yeah, I think like that sort of tempo work or like slow eccentric work should be reserved for like a select few exercises, because most people don't have the time to be like, that could double the length or like 3 times the length of your workout, and people are like wanting to get into the gym 30 minutes, smash their session and go. So I think like if people are short on time, then time under tension maybe isn't the right thing to choose for their workout.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think it's quite boring. Like, go and try it, right? Go and try doing 4 second concentric and 4 second eccentric for like 3 sets of 10. It's really boring. And I love working out and it's boring. Like,
I quite, you know what? I actually quite like it. If I have the time, then I quite enjoy doing time under tension. And I think sometimes it can be really helpful to get like that mind muscle connection as well. I think it helps you like tune into working the right muscles, particularly when you're maybe not, you're just used to like firing through exercises really quickly. I think sometimes it can be beneficial when you're focusing more on technique potentially. But
I
I
do.
just
I
wanted to
agree
crack my
with
case.
that. Like, if you're thinking about if you go in this week, and actually, let's say this to commit to six people. Like, if you go in this week and really think about what muscle you want to be engaging, and really think about squeezing it, and worry a little bit less about the weight and just like getting that feeling and going a little bit slower. I think that is one thing. Like, now and again, I'll try and remind myself to do that for a workout, and I do get a much better workout. Or another thing that I put on Instagram today is it's very easy to get complacent with your workouts. It's very easy to be like, this is the weight I lifted last week. I'm going to lift the same again, or just kind of stuck in your routine. And one of the negatives of online training is that, like, when I used to work face to face, like, I could tell that my client could do two more reps. So I'd be like, we're doing two more. Or I'd be like, we're going up a weight. If you can't manage it, that's fine. But they always managed it. And it's that mentality of like, oh no, I couldn't do 10 press ups. I'm like, let's try. Oh, look, you've done 15 because I
Emma's
will tell
watching
you.
me. Ah,
Yeah, like
I
I
do
need,
two
like, there's
more.
that little bit more pressure, but there's also that belief that I have in you, which means you're kind of forced to do it, and you have that safety net of me being there as well. It is harder to push yourself on your own, but you can absolutely do it. And one way to do it is just think, I'm going to lift, you know, what I normally lift, but I'm going to do two more reps. Now, I caveat this with good form, but the likelihood is you can always do two more. Not always, obviously, but like you can do two more than what you're pushing yourself to at the moment. So I would try and do that. Just think, right, okay, if I'm doing three sets of 10, like I'm going to do three sets of 12, and let's see if I can do that. And then you realize actually, okay, I could have been pushing myself that little bit more.
I'm gonna do that this week. You
Yeah.
inspired me. I saw your post. I was like, oh, I'm up
Yeah.
for the challenge. Let's go.
Good.
Okay, next question from one of Andy's clients. How do we know when we've reached a healthy, I think that's supposed to say weight, but it says weigh, healthy weight in the body? In the past, I was obsessed with the scales because I was told by a doctor I have to be between 60 and 70 kilograms to not be overweight based on BMI. It took me nearly 10 years to get away from the scales now, and I only use it as guidance. But I do wonder if I go with the way I feel in myself, or when do I know I am a healthy weight? So I think this is asking, like, when to know whether, like, their fat loss or their weight loss has been enough and when to stop.
Yeah, and my answer to this is it's a range. So actually, your doctor probably wasn't far off. Now, we know that BMI isn't perfect, but if they were saying you want to be somewhere between 60 and 70 kilograms, like they're not being specific about that. Like somewhere within that range is probably where you're going to sit that's going to be healthy for you. They're probably not far off wrong with that. Now, at some points of your life, you might sit at 63 kilograms and then at other points, you might sit at 66, and because you've got different things going on, or because you've put on some muscle mass, or because you've just had a baby, or you know, like whatever's happening in your life, like you might move within that range. But actually, 10 kilograms is quite a big range, and I would probably agree with somewhere within that. Now, where that is specifically for you at the moment, within that kind of healthy weight range, I would always say the best weight for you is where you feel the best. And that means a balance between all the different things in your life. So it's your social life, it's your relationship with food, it's how you're training, it's how you feel in your clothes, it's the freedom you have around food and being able to go out and the balance that you have. And the point is, those things will change. Like the importance of each thing will change at different times as well. And we're wild, but we're literally not that far off from coming into kind of thinking about Christmas time, and there'll be like more nights out, or there'll be like Christmas nights out and stuff. And actually, maybe that part of your life will become bigger and a little bit more important, which might mean that the scales move up a little bit. And then maybe after Christmas, everyone's like dry January, not going out as much, saving the pennies a bit. Like, actually, maybe fitness again becomes, or like you, it's easier to cut down on calories a little bit more and you drop your weight again a little bit. The whole point is it's a range. No one has. For the rest of your life, Catherine, 61 kilograms is your healthy weight for the rest of your life. It is completely dependent on what's going on in your life. But I do think I actually agree with a range. And BMI for most people isn't wildly far off. Now, if you have a ton of muscle mass, then yeah, it's not particularly realistic for you. The other thing, and I once mentioned this to Amelia actually, is that I was definitely not a healthy level of body fat for periods of time. But because I had enough muscle mass, I was never a low BMI. So you can see that actually at like kind of both ends of the spectrum, there is issues with BMI, but these are quite extreme. Like there's not that many people. Like I wouldn't say that my BMI is wrong because I have so much muscle mass now. Like I didn't have that much, but
Come on, yeah, you
someone
do.
who's like
You're
in
ripped,
an
babe.
obese, someone who's in like an obese category because of the amount of muscle mass they store, like is normally quite an elite level athlete for most people. So I always say that BMI plus common sense is actually a pretty good measure of, and again, not a specific number, but a range, like somewhere between 60 and 70. And you know what? If you were 71, probably wouldn't be the end of the world. And if you were 59, but feeling great, again, wouldn't be the end of the world. But it's a range, like it gives you some kind of like tangible target. And like I said, 10 kilograms is a pretty big range.
I really like what you said about you going through I suppose seasons in life, and like that is going to change and fluctuate within that range. And I think when we think of health as well, I think we very much think of health being this physical, it's just like the physical element of our body, but health is like multifaceted, isn't it? Like there's different, like there's mental health, there's physical health, there's, I'm trying to remember all the facets, spiritual, like there's so many different things, social, intellectual. There's all these different things that contribute to health, not just the physical side of things. So if you're, at a point where you're still trying to lose fat, you're within a healthy BMI, but the trade-off actually means that you're compromising or even sacrificing your social life, or it means that, I don't know, you're studying for a master's and you can't concentrate and you're getting shit grades, like because you're being affected by the fact that you're still dieting, then that is going to impact your health as well. So don't think of health as just physical. Like think of it as all those different contributors within your life.
Yeah, and that's such a good point. More to the point with this specific question, health is certainly not a weight. Like, that's for sure. And you can be technically overweight and healthier than someone who is of a healthy weight because of the behaviors that you're taking. Like, if you're slightly overweight, but you're active and you're fueling your body with good, healthy, nutritious foods, and you're minimizing processed foods and trans fats and things like that, like, actually, you're probably way healthier than someone who is technically a healthy BMI, but doesn't exercise, gets 2,000 steps a day, and just eats like pot noodles every day. Like that, you can't see a lot of that stuff. So it certainly isn't a weight. But I do think that sometimes when people say health isn't a weight, it's almost like misinterpreted to weight doesn't matter for health. Like it does. But it's just not the only thing that matters, but it's one of many things that matter. And I hate the false argument that people give between the trade-off between mental health and like fat loss. I'm like, you're doing fat loss wrong if it's negatively impacting your mental health. But you like, I think sometimes it's like an anti-diet argument of like, well, what would you rather have, poor mental health or be overweight? And I'm like, neither. It's a freaking stupid false dichotomy. Like, why would you need either? And actually, like you said, all of these things interact. Now, if you're overweight, significantly overweight, and then you end up having physical health complications because of that, you don't think that's going to impact your mental health? Literally, like having only ever had a very mild scare with something, nothing matters when you think that you've lost your physical health, like nothing else. You cannot possibly have mental health if you're worried about, like, significantly worried about your physical health. So I think that it's just a kind of odd argument to put forward that I don't think has been well thought through.
I totally agree. I hate that, like, there's always that, like, oh yeah, you have to sit at either end of the scale, like either like, oh, diet culture or anti-diet culture, and like the middle ground is like so much harder to, I think, navigate, but it's like so important that we sit there.
I'm
Oh.
so excited because I had an application for coaching today, and in it said, screenshot it because I loved it so much. Says, so one of the questions we ask is, why do you want to work with Emma or one of the ESG coaches? And the reply was, love the ethos and delivery of messages. I don't want to accept my body this way, but I also don't want diet culture to rule my life. I need a middle ground. And I was like, quite, like, hopefully that message is getting across. And like, that's what we want to provide.
I love that. You're in the right place, friend.
You're here. You found the middle
Come
ground. Welcome.
in. Okay, would you like another question?
I'd love one.
Another check-in question from one of my clients. The one thing I struggle with is when does exercise become enjoyable? I do it because I have to, not because I want to. My other half gets a massive kick out of achieving something like doing a 10K or going snowboarding or training to do a triathlon. Wow. I've never felt that way or got that buzz from exercise. Will this ever change?
Great question. I have a few points on this, but I do think that your husband sounds like he's found. I mean, I wouldn't call those things exercise in the same way of like exercise might be like going to the gym because you're exercising for the sake of exercising. That isn't always true because some people are training for bodybuilding because that's what they love, or they're doing CrossFit because that's the sport that they love. Or, you know, something like that. But a lot of people are going to the gym for the sake of exercising as opposed to like training for something. And it sounds like he's found things with a kind of goal at the end, like I'm training for a triathlon. Like that gives me a purpose, an end point, and I really get buzz out of it and I enjoy it. And he sounds quite performance driven as well, where he's like, oh, I did a 10K, like I set this target and I achieved it. You get so much from achieving goals that you set. Now, they don't have to be a 10K, it could be your first five press ups or your first pull up, or I don't know, running a 5K or being able to walk a 5K. Like, it doesn't really matter the level of goal, but like setting yourself something that you can't do right now, but that you want to work towards doing, like, you get so much out of achieving that. And then I would also say, not everyone will love exercise, might not be something that you love. Now, I believe that everyone can find exercise that they don't hate. And you may not have found that yet, but you should certainly think about things that you might think about trying or that you enjoy doing. And sometimes it's like social things that there's an element of like fun around it as well. Like a lot of the time, especially maybe things like netball, which you might be thinking this sounds awful, but netball, for example, where you don't even really realize that you're exercising because you're playing a sport and you're doing something, there's a point to it. Or doing things like I was speaking about this last night, like bar class or pole class, or this weird, like these like ropes that hang down from the ceiling and you kind of get like tangled up in them, whatever. Like, is that something
I'm imagining someone like in a web, but like I don't know, like
Well, it
just
kind of looks like that. They're like
heavy.
fabric ropes that you kind of like hang off and stuff.
I don't know what you
Or
mean.
maybe it's dancing for you, where actually, you know, if you're a dancer and you're learning a dance, you're not thinking, how many steps have I done? How long do I have to do this? You're not like clock watching the treadmill. You're just like, oh, okay, like I need to do this, 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 and this. That's how I imagine dancing works, obviously. But you don't notice that you're exercising, right? So it might be finding something that you enjoy so much that you don't realize that actually also you're getting great exercise from doing this as well. And then I would also say that there is some people don't like resistance training, but it doesn't mean it's not probably the best thing you can do for your health. So kind of suck it up and do it. And you could do, when it's someone, if that is you, do a minimal effective dose type thing. So instead of thinking, what's the optimal I can do, even though I absolutely hate it and resent it, think, what's the minimum I can do to get a benefit from this? Because do you know what? I don't enjoy it, but I know it's really important for my health. There are loads of things in life that we do that we don't necessarily enjoy, but we have to do them. I would put resistance training as should be one of those things.
I totally agree with all of those points. I think that you can change the way that you think about it as well. So like not like you can make yourself love it, because that's probably quite unrealistic, but you can certainly be like, okay, like we say you don't have to, you get to. So you could start thinking about it like that and actually be like, okay, remind yourself, or we can remind you of the benefits of doing resistance training. And like Emma says, you can do the minimal effective dose, so you're not doing more than what you need to be doing to get the benefits. And then link the benefits to the things that you care about in life. Like, how is that going to contribute to those things? So what would be a good thing for you to do is probably sit down and look at what your values are. Like, what is important to you in life? Is it I don't know, living until you're like 100, so in which case, like doing resistance exercise, the benefits of that will help you live longer and reduce the risk of different diseases. I don't know, you want to run around with your kids, or maybe you've not had kids yet, but one day you want to be able to have kids. Like, there's so many different things that you can link from the benefits you get from resistance training to the things that are important to you in life. And if you're finding it a struggle to link those things, we can help you link those things. We will help
Yeah,
you.
it's such a good point, like thinking about the outcome and then appreciating it because of the outcome. Like you might not like going to work, but you like it when you have money to spend on things that you like. Like that's the outcome. So actually you might start being like, yeah, I get to go to work because I get to make this money and then I get to spend it on things that I want to spend it on. Great. Like so you kind of want to do it. And your life generally will be so much happier if you think of things like that. Like you'll just enjoy things so much more, even if you don't inherently enjoy your job, if you can see the benefit of it, both for yourself and hopefully for like the wider society and why it's important, because all jobs are important, then you can appreciate that you get to do it and that there's a purpose to it, and then you don't kind of resent the process of it. And I think that's so important, not just to getting results, but just to enjoying your life.
Totally, yeah.
And then I will say as well, re-exercise and minimal effective dose, probably the best example of the law of diminishing returns. Like actually 1 hour of exercise a week just gets you such incredible benefits. And one of the speakers at Level Up actually showed this. I wish I had like the figures off the top of my head, but he had showed this study that looked at essentially the benefits you're getting from each set of resistance training you do per week. And it was just showing how much benefit you get from the first couple of sets versus the last couple of sets. It's essentially the law of diminishing returns that's shown in the context of exercise. And it's everything that we talk about all the time. So remember that as well. Like if you're thinking, well, there's no point doing a little bit, there is literally every point in the world doing a little bit. There's actually not that much point doing the kind of bit between 80% and 100%. There's probably not that much point doing that, but there certainly is the point doing the bit between 0% and 20%. Like that's going to get you a really great result.
Amen, sister.
Woo-woo.
Next question from Sharon. If optimal muscle protein, oh, one of our favorite topics, if optimal muscle protein synthesis requires around 25 to 50 grams of protein in one hit, and then she's like, is it in terms of 25 to 50? I think it's 25 to 40 or 20 to 40. Then is there any point in having the little top-ups away from main meals, e.g., making up the day's protein quota by having a baby bell as a snack before bed, or a 15 gram protein bar as a snack in the day? I was going to say 15 kilogram protein bar then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. Often I'll have a small protein snack at some point to keep me up to 100 grams. But is this largely pointless if one of my goals is trying to build muscle and the other is fat loss? Thanks, lovely coaches.
One, it's not pointless for so many reasons, but especially if your goal is fat loss and you're trying to stick to a deficit, having a little protein snack, even if you're not maximizing muscle protein synthesis, will still help with hunger levels and you sticking to your calories. Also, and I think this is something that people miss, 20 to 40 grams, or the equivalent of 3 grams of leucine, will maximally stimulate muscle protein synthesis. That doesn't mean that less than that will have no impact whatsoever. It's not an on-off switch, it's like a dimmer switch that you then
I
like
was
when you
thinking the
turn,
same thing.
ah, we're on sync. But you will still get a benefit from having less protein. You're just not going to totally saturate that benefit. So, is there a point? Yeah, both from a satiety standpoint and from a building muscle standpoint.
I don't think I have anything to add.
The only, if you wanted to get mega geeky about this, the only potential reason why I wouldn't do this, and actually, in the context that you've described, this is pretty irrelevant, but if you are consistently feeding yourself amino acids, there is some research that suggests that you can become slightly resistant to the presence of amino acids, meaning they don't have the same impact on muscle protein synthesis. So you do want these, what we term refractory periods between boluses, is what they call it in the research, of protein, so like feeding of protein. So ideally, you do split up your protein into these like 20 to 30 grams 3 to 4 times a day, as opposed to continuously kind of snacking on protein throughout the day and elevating your amino acids consistently throughout the day and not having these the ability to spike them. Because it seems that you need amino acid levels to, or muscle protein synthesis levels more to the point, to drop down to baseline to then be stimulated again. So that's one potential reason. And it's not so much in this example, but more, no one on Commit to Six will be doing this, but a lot of people used to, I would say like 3 or 4 years ago, just constantly sip branched chain amino acids. Don't ask why, but they did, right? Which is just one of the most stupid things to do ever. But there you go. Don't do that if you're doing that.
Awesome. Okay, next question. I have asked this before, but if I can't follow the routine, say pull, due to machines, etc., not being available or busy, how will it impact on my session?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't worry too much. If you're getting the majority of your exercises in and say you can't access like the seated hamstring curl, for example, either skip it or see if you can find an alternative exercise that works the same muscle group. Now, if you're struggling to find an alternative exercise, ask us, like put up a question in the group, ask in your check-in, and we can point you in the right direction if you're not quite sure what other exercises would work, the hamstrings, for example. But again, like in most gyms, there's plenty of different kit that you can get quite creative with the exercises. And I would say that you're probably not impacting your session loads unless you're like skipping like half of your workout.
Or what one of my clients used to do is like, yeah, I don't want to do burpees, so I just swap them for bicep curls.
Was that Ollie?
That was Ollie, yeah. And I was just like, no, you can't do that. But like, yeah, I mean, one, you don't want to wait around for equipment. Ain't nobody got time for that. And two, think exactly like Catherine's just said. Think about the muscle that you're working and how you can work it in a different way or with a different piece of equipment. Because your body doesn't know that you're on the seated hamstring curl. It just knows that there is a tension on your hamstring and it's creating a bit of damage, which means that after this workout, we're going to make sure we repair that. And actually, the next time it's put under that level of stress, it'll be better able to deal with it. That's what your muscle hears. So that you, I think people worry too much about like the specific piece of kit that they're using. And actually, normally the basics work much better anyway.
And even if you have to do the exercises in a different order, like that's okay, you're
Oh,
still
yeah.
getting the volume in there overall. So I wouldn't worry too much. And actually, like going back to my hamstring curl example, like do hamstring curls on a boost on a not a Bosu ball, on a Swiss ball. Like they're
Okay,
different,
good
or like a
luck on a
T-Rex.
Bosu
Well, yeah, I know. Well, I don't know why I said that.
ball.
Wow. Okay. Next question. Now in maintenance and needing new goals, push-ups on toes done, increasing weight and reps regularly. Don't have a chin-up bar, so can't start those. Can you suggest some other strength goal ideas, please, ladies and gents? What about Andy?
What about Andy?
What
She doesn't
about
want any
Andy?
ideas from Andy. I mean, where do you even start? And the thing is, you're not done with push-ups. You've done, I don't know, however many you've set your goal of, but then you can move that goal. You can make, right, I've done 10 now. I wonder if I can get to 20. And there's a couple of people on Commit to Six who have a goal of doing 40 push-ups. And that's because ages ago, I shared that piece of research. I actually don't know if it was in men now. But it showed that it was to do with the amount of push-ups you can do versus how long people live and different like quartiles. So it was like the more push-ups you can do, the longer you live. And but then I think it was like 40 plus is when they stopped. So it's like that kind of showed that then you've kind of saturated the benefit of being able to do push-ups. But that's why a lot of people have that goal of 40, because they're like, I want to get to like that top percentage. And then I'm going to live forever, apparently, or that bit longer. So
Immortal.
that might be a goal. Like you can push these goals more, Or, and it's always hard setting someone else's goal, because if I was like, why don't we see if we can get your squat up? You might be like, I kind of hate squatting and I don't really care how heavy I squat. Or if I'm like, I love pull-up goals, right? But if you're like, I have absolutely no interest in doing a pull-up, it's not a particularly good goal for you. So it has to excite you. I feel like I've always wanted to just be able to go for a run and keep running for 20 minutes. Like, that's a pretty cool goal. But again, for some people, they might be like, I couldn't care less how long I can run or how far I can run. And I don't really care about that, in which case they wouldn't stick to it. So it does have to come from you. But you can set goals on basically any exercise.
And it could even be like a skill-based thing. It doesn't have to necessarily be like performance. So
Double
you could
unders.
dub, yeah, exactly. Oh, I tried doing those in lockdown. I just ended up like whipping myself loads.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
what? Oh.
Not
But yeah, like
into
double unders or like clean and press or something. But you know, if you're gonna do like really advanced moves, it would be a good idea to get a bit of guidance from a face-to-face personal trainer if you're doing like barbell work. But yeah, like Emma says, it's kind of not really up to us. We could throw loads of ideas at you. Like, there's so many things. But I would like go through your workouts and just be like, okay, what exercises do I enjoy? And then even in your like next check-in, be like, okay, I enjoy these exercises. How can I challenge myself and work on making them harder? Because even with push-ups, like you could do 40 reps, or you could be like, I'm gonna try weighted push-ups with a rucksack on my back or like a disc on my back and see what I can do. Like, it's endless. The possibilities are endless.
so endless. What was I going to say as you were talking there? Yeah, I don't know. It's gone.
This floated away.
Floated away.
We'll let you off. You've had quite a lot of calls today
Oh God, I know.
already.
I'm here and I'm excited. What's the next question?
Okay, another question. In the morning, my stomach looks amazing, not totally flat, but nice, and you can see muscle definition. But by afternoon, early evening, I actually look pregnant. I have two kids, aged 5 and 3, but I still have this mum tum. It's so disheartening. If I breathe in, it looks nice and flat and toned, but I can't spend the whole day breathing in. And of course, I forget to do so anyway. Why can't I shift this? I'm eating really well. She's hitting a calorie target, banks some for the weekend, eats lots of fruit and veg. Plenty of protein, gets her steps in, and gym workouts. I just want the mum tum gone. Help.
It is gone. You're not putting on fat over the day, are you? Like, if you wake up and you're like, I'm really happy with the way that I look, and my stomach's really flat, and then later on in the day, it doesn't look like that. That's normal. Mine doesn't look like that later on in the day. You wake up, you're a little bit dehydrated, and there's probably not much inside you. That's why
It's
you look
literally
like
food.
that. And then you go and you eat some food and you drink some water and you probably have some salt and you retain a little bit of water and like normal things happen throughout the day and you don't look quite as lean by the end of the day. That is completely normal and also inevitable. So I wouldn't say that you really need to change anything. Like I think everybody experiences that. I don't know if you do.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah. Like
Yeah.
you always look leaner in the morning. That's just life. I would say a couple of things like stop body checking, because really it's probably only you that notices, nobody else cares, and it's obviously getting you down. And I can't remember what else I was going to say as we were going through that, but I think that's my main thing. Like you haven't put on fat throughout the day. There's just normal bodily processes. Doesn't sound like you do have a mum, whatever like mum tum in inverted commas is. Like I don't think you do have that. Because if you're happy in the morning, like that's your body. It hasn't actually, your body composition hasn't changed over the day. It's too short a period of time.
Yeah, agreed. It's like when people like see a massive fluctuation in the scales, and it's like, well, you've just had like you've just drunk like 500, like half a liter of water. That's going to be like half a kilo, right? So like,
Yeah.
of course it's going to happen. I think that's right. We're just making
Yeah.
that up.
Yes, it is.
It is
Well
right.
done.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, I mean things like that. And actually, if it's short term, then like I said, it can't possibly be a change in body composition. This is why anytime someone's like, oh my God, I'm freaking out, I put on 4 pounds overnight, we're always as coaches, like not in the even the slightest bit stressed. Like there is no way that that can be body fat. It simply can't happen. So don't stress about it. And if it's changing frequently throughout the day, like, so does my body. Like, so do most people's bodies. It's just
Normal.
normal.
I would even like, if you journal, what you could do is to like practice a bit of body appreciation. And like Emma's suggested, is stop body checking as much, or even just like notice how much you're doing it. Like, you can write down, okay, like I've checked like my stomach in the mirror 5 times today. I think if you start to journal about the ways in which you appreciate your body other than how it looks, you kind of start to move away from being so overly concerned about how you look, then, because you're appreciating your body for what it does for you. So like my body, like how did my body help support me in like socializing today, or connecting with other people, or working, or whatever that would be. I think then you kind of like move away from that preoccupation over what you look like.
Agreed. Journaling is always a good idea on that front. I've totally lost my thought again, but I had one.
Oh
I
no.
was so engrossed in what you were saying. Yeah, I don't know. Oh no, okay. The one thing I was going to say, and this will depend on the extent of it, because I think it sounds like what we've just been talking about, but if you are finding you have like significant bloating that is painful, and you think it's more than just normal eating and there being food volume inside you and just normal human fluctuation, then I would kind of start keeping a diary of what you're eating and when you're eating it and when that kind of pain and bloating occurs. And let's see if there's certain foods that you're not agreeing with. I don't think that is the case, but you know, if someone else is listening and they're like, oh yeah, I get significant bloating, that would be kind of my first port of call. The other point I wanted to make is that it sounds like you're quite lean, and it's more no these things are more noticeable when you're quite lean. So if you're waking up and you're kind of like pretty flat stomach and like kind of even got some abs at the top, like it's going pretty well, you're gonna notice a much bigger difference than someone who has a bit more body fat, and they might not really notice the slight change throughout the day. But when you've got that a little bit more definition, it's actually easier to see these changes throughout the day. So that might be another thing to consider as well. All
Awesome.
right. Thank you so much for your time. We'll be back later on in the week to answer, or next week to answer the rest of the questions. Or maybe we'll sneak one in this week.
Oh, cheeky.
Oh, a cheeky double. Because I know we've got quite a few to get through.
We do still have quite a few, yeah. I'm just scrolling now. Yeah, there's a few.
Okay, great. Love a question.
Awesome.
Thank you for
Bye.
your time and your brain.
Bye,
Bye.
guys.
Thank you as ever for your time and attention. If you want to talk to me about coaching, or if you want to find out more about how to work with me, head over to esgfitness.co.uk. There is also lots of free information on the website and some worksheets, which I hope you will find useful. If you've enjoyed this episode, I would love to hear from you. Please tag me in your stories at esgfitness, or shoot me a message. And if you think you know anyone who would enjoy this episode, why not share it with them? Thanks, guys!